Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody. In today's podcast segment, we have the honor and privilege of interviewing Mr. Andrew Lassise. He is the founder and owner of Rush Tech Support, a leading cybersecurity company that focuses exclusively on, of all things, cybersecurity for accountants and accounting firms. Andrew, thank you for your time this morning, and let's go ahead and get started, please.
Yeah, Robbie, thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I think you're the first company or that I've interviewed that's actually specializing in one unique area of cybersecurity. Everybody's kind of, you know, they're in different, you know, parts of the pie, but yeah, that's great. Let's go ahead and get started. We looked up your bio, and you seem to have a very deep and rich background in cybersecurity. I know that you got your degree in something else, but how did you segue into IT security? And can you tell us any highlights of your career, please?
Sure. So I had originally graduated in 2009 with a financial planning degree during one of the worst recessions in American history. And contrary to what I had been told my entire life, that if you graduate with good grades from college, there will be employers that are just knocking down the door to hire you. And as it turns out, during a recession, nobody wants to hire a financial planner that is a kid that has zero real-world experience in actually doing financial planning. So they, I had segued just kind of killing time. I had worked in restaurants for a couple years before I had graduated, and I was also working IT as just a side hustle at my university. And when I graduated, I was like, gonna do finance. My mom does investment lending. My dad is a stockbroker. So it's kind of instilled into me to carry on the family tradition of being in finance. So I have a good background in it. But my passion was really in IT and computer stuff. And I guess maybe at the time it wasn't even really called IT. It was just, you know, being a nerd with computers before it was cool to be a nerd or whatever the conversation looked like. So we, I had moved to Florida. This was about 7 years ago, and I needed a job. And I went to basically every place that I could find. And I walked into one place, and I thought it was for a sales job. And so I show up, and I have my resume geared towards a sales position. And the person doing the interview, he's like, "Oh, you can do tech? We need techs here." And I was like, "Oh, that's wonderful. I've been trying to get a tech job back when I lived in Maryland for like the last couple years. And now I just fall into this job." So I had worked at that company, worked my way up and learned the ins and outs of the IT industry. And then a friend reached out one day. He said, "Hey, I heard you're really good at tech. I need a, we're starting up a company and we want you to run the tech department." And I was like, "Nah, you know, like startups are, it's a risky thing. You know, most of them fail and there's the statistics. So it's not for me. I've got a good thing at my current company." And then I kind of took a step back. So I'm maybe 26 at the time. And then I realized, if I'm ever going to go out and give entrepreneurship like a real try, like 20, maybe 27, no family, like I don't have any roots. So like the worst thing that can possibly happen, worst case, is try it, fail, and that's actually what happened. 3 months after I started the company, they went out of business, and kind of sucked. And, you know, it's one of those moments that just kind of stands out, like one of those flash memories where the owner called us all in. He said we need to have a family meeting, and we didn't need to show up Monday because we were no longer in business. And so, again, my head went to the entrepreneurship, what do I have to lose? And I was like, I was running this whole tech department by myself. You know, maybe I could just run a whole company by myself. And one thing led to another, and that's how Brush Tech Support got started. And now we've, you know, recently, this year particularly, we've gotten a bunch of, and I wasn't even aware that these words existed, but it was like top 100 VARs from Accounting Today and top 100 cybersecurity companies from the Manifest and all these things that I, it's just kind of like, hey, you won this award. I was like, oh, that's cool. Thank you.
Well, hey, that's still, you know, I mean, that's how I, in fact, that's how I found your name, actually. It was through one of these top reviews, I think, through clutch.com. I don't know if you've heard of that website, but I think that's kind of got, I would have never heard of you, honestly. Even a Google search probably
Yeah, that was two of the more recent ones, top IT companies in Florida, I believe, and top, There were two different things. I want to say it was one was IT, one was cybersecurity, maybe something like that. But so we won it, so we're probably doing something right.
I'm sure you are. You must be getting those accolades. But anyway, my hats off to you. Congratulations on that. That's a, you know, that's a big thing to accomplish. Now, how long has Rush Tech Support been in business, and how did you come up with that name?
So we started. It technically was 2014, like when the LLC was filed and things like that. So it's kind of the official start date on paper would be March 26th, 2014. And the name, it was actually, I had been toying with a million different names. And so what I did, it's called I think it's called like the Pomodoro technique. And I just took 15 minutes and listed out every single name that I could think of, just everything that came to mind, and just listed it out. It was like Infinity Tech Support, Infinity Tech Solutions. I liked the Infinity name. And what ultimately ended up happening was when I went to purchase the domains, they were crazy expensive. So I was like, well, I don't have any money, so which domains are not crazy expensive? And Rush Tech Support was the least expensive one, and so that's how we got the name.
That's a cool name. It has a good name to it. It has a good ring to it. So,
yeah.
Now, tax time is a very feared moment for everybody. Even I hate it, and I'm sure there you probably don't like it either. And worse yet, you know, when we get letters from the IRS and all that, you know, that's another, you know, flip-out moment, you know, go-crazy moment. But why specialize in accounting firms? What brought you to that? Is it because of your finance background?
Yeah, so the finance background played a role in it. It also, I had done an internship with the IRS in my senior year of college. So I personally have a background in accounting more so than the average tech, so to speak. So I can speak their language better than 99% of techs. And then we realized there were a lot of cybersecurity laws that circle around accounting, and we discovered that most techs weren't aware of it, and so we kind of honed in on that.
Okay, excellent. Now, can any tech support, I mean, can any tech company, IT, cybersecurity company support accounting firms, or does it take a special skill set and knowledge set that obviously you possess? Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. So I apologize for the babies. The piece of IT that's not necessarily one size fits all comes down to the compliance piece. There's a lot of laws regarding data protection from the FTC and the IRS, and all of our techs have been certified by the American Institute of CPAs in cybersecurity. So there's a couple nuanced things that apply particularly to accountants that most accountants aren't aware of. No techs are aware of it. And what we find is we'll walk into companies that have a, from an IT standpoint, a good cybersecurity setup. But from a compliance standpoint, from the IRS and what's required, we discovered that most have a very, very poor setup compared to what is required and what is just a usual best practice. So, for instance, most of the companies that we come in and do audits on, and we perform complimentary audits, gap analysis to see where your company currently is compared to the laws from the IRS and FTC. And what we find a lot of times is people don't have things like full disk encryption, or they have a variation of a VPN, but a lot of times they're missing some of the key ingredients from the compliance standpoint. And we realize that people just aren't aware of what they aren't aware of. And, you know, most people are familiar with medical and HIPAA, but most people aren't familiar with the accounting industry and the rules and regulations that apply to them specifically. And so we were able to build out an SOP based on that and bridge that gap. And that was kind of the big push for it.
Okay, excellent. Now, who is your typical customer base you're trying to target? Is, I mean, obviously they're accounting firms, but are they the small to medium-sized ones, or perhaps the extremely large ones, or what's your portfolio like?
Yeah, we run the full gambit. So since our background was in the – originally it was in the residential IT space, it was an easy transition to be able to apply – some of the higher level work that we were doing on residential plus the compliance piece to even the solo or less than five firms. So we have a large portfolio of actually pretty small clients where they wouldn't be able to afford necessarily the resources, or they wouldn't have the resources for an enterprise managed services team behind them. But if we kind of bridge the gap of a kind of like a geek squad on steroids with fast response times, remote management systems, so a lot of things that we provide to the large clients, we still apply to the small guys. So the portfolio actually has a lot of smaller organizations, like in the five and below. But, I mean, we – like you said, you know, accounting firms and like how most IT companies are, we can service anybody. And frankly, if you take the build out that we do for accountants, you could apply that across the board to multiple industries. And it's a much higher level of security than what's required in any industry.
Hello, Andrew. Hello? 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 Hello?
That we weren't connected anymore.
Well, Andrew, you may have to repeat that answer a little bit because I think we got cut off or something in between there.
All right, sure. So was the question on who we service, obviously accounting firms, but who and how?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so to answer the question, we had started off with residential and then had grown the organization over the last couple of years. So it was an easier transition to start working with the solo and the less than five employee organizations that maybe can't afford some of the higher level enterprise solutions when it comes to IT and managed services. And I mean, anyone in the IT field knows, I mean, you give me a budget and I can find a million different ways to hit it. So, I mean, when there's a smaller organization that may not have those resources, even though it is a business, it still looks similar to a residential or smaller organization. So there's a lot of the issues that we deal with kind of transcend from the residential to the B2B space. So our portfolio is made up of a lot of smaller accounting firms, the five and under. However, we can still service just as well the organizations that are larger, but a lot of the opportunities that come our way are from some of the smaller guys that are like, hey, you know, you guys are actually affordable and, you know, you're decorated in all these accolades and my current IT guy doesn't do X, Y, and Z. And could you possibly shine some light on what we need to do? And so we've kind of become the go-to for accounting firms and put together a service package that is affordable for the small guys where, you know, we're not throwing the kitchen sink at them and saying, well, you know, it's $2,000 a month for everything we offer, regardless if you have one or 20 employees. So it's a lot more affordable for them. And so it's attracted a lot of the smaller accounting firms to us through word of mouth and through our marketing. And we have a podcast called Tech Talk for Accountants. And so we're connected very much in the accounting industry. And I've been part of some really cool expert panels on like Intuit, and we've been doing work with Xero. And so a bunch of the better known accounting software, we've been able to kind of put ourselves in there and kind of positioned me as kind of the face of it. But, you know, my techs are the ones that are really showing up day in, day out, and really doing a great job for our customers.
Sure. Now, I was just wondering, how big is your company employee-wise? Do you have any other offices located in the U.S. or?
So the organization is 15 full-time employees, and we have employees in multiple states. Since March, we started doing work from home. So at the time when March rolled around, we had employees in Pennsylvania, Maryland, and those are just coincidentally up where I'm originally from. We had an employee that was in Iowa, and now we've got people in Virginia. So we've got a lot of locations, but with the work from home movement, I mean, it's pretty much just humans sitting in different chairs at this point in different places with different unemployment and taxes and headache. So we're all
sure.
over, but centrally located in southern Florida, West Palm Beach.
Okay. So you kind of got away from brick and mortar presence and everything's all virtual pretty much now for you?
Yeah, I mean, what we discovered, and I thought it was going to be short-lived, but, I mean, the employee satisfaction is up. Customer satisfaction is up. Sales are up. So, or actually, I take that back. Sales are not up, but sales are stable with where they were when we were in the office. So it's kind of like, you know, we've got this pandemic. We've got this giant liability. And, you know, do we get $75,000 a year of value out of sitting in an office as opposed to sitting at home? And, I mean, the answer for us is no. I mean, and I thought it was going to be short-lived. I thought it was going to be, you know, give it a couple months, and then we'll see what people are really like. But, I mean, it's been over 6 months now since we've been in an office, and frankly, nothing has, like, things in the organization have changed, but there hasn't been really any big struggle or obstacles with working from home. And just, you know, we're more dependent on Slack than we were previously because I can't just, you know, turn to my side and ask someone something. We've got to be involved in it. But I mean, aside from that, the money saved and the just overall, I mean, people prefer working from home, and there's the safety aspect of it too. So The work from home has been good for us at Rush Tech, and it also puts kind of in the mind of our clients that we're not just a West Palm Beach IT company that can only service West Palm Beach. I mean, we've literally got customers in different countries. We were literally working on a person today from Mexico that we had sold last night. So it doesn't have to be local. I mean, it's, you know, at IT.
Okay.
People in IT space, we know you can do everything remotely, but a lot of the people that that we work with, they're like, oh, I didn't know that this existed. I thought I had to have the guy come to my office, or I had to pack it up and bring it to the shop. This remote system is, it's still a new concept to people, and that's been around like forever.
Andrew, you're still breaking up on me a little bit. Can you come closer to the phone, please?
I apologize. Yeah, so the remote piece has worked well for us, and the customers have been happy. So overall, I mean, it's been a big plus for us.
Excellent, excellent. Okay. Do you have any client success stories that you'd like to share with us, obviously without naming any names or any testimonials that you'd like to bring on here in the podcast?
Yeah, well, so one of the recurring things is that we shed light on laws that a lot of the firms were not aware that they were even breaking to begin with. And for someone like, you know, if you're an accountant, you don't understand IT. So the IRS releases publication 4557 amongst the 10,000 other publications, and you know, it's in one ear, out the other. But when we realize that here's like a huge list of best practices and things that need to happen, let's capitalize on this, you know, and inform people that here are the regulations that need to apply to your firm. And a lot of times when we share that information, they were just like, I didn't know that this existed. And a current IT guy didn't know this existed, but you guys clearly have an understanding on this. And so the 4557 leads into the FTC laws around data security. And just so much of this stuff is people don't know what they don't know. And so a lot of our clients, the biggest win for them is I am now compliant with regulations that I wasn't aware of that Rush brought to our attention. And, I mean, we've got tons of success stories as far as, you know, putting together an IT package that saved people from having to go to the office to physically access the server and things like VPN. You know, it's not necessarily an accounting success story, but it still applies to majority of our customers, regardless of the industry. But we've been able to help people transition, especially once COVID started, to make sure that just because they used SaaS products doesn't necessarily mean that everything is safe and protected. And so giving them peace of mind across the board to know that even when their employees are working from home, there are still safeguards in place that they can know that their customers are safe and that they don't have to worry about all the crazy things that can happen in the cybersecurity world and all that stuff on like Mr. Robot. Like, it's all real and it happens all the time. And just most people kind of have the mindset of, well, it won't happen to me. And then when it does happen to them, they're very upset. So we are happy to report that none of our clients have experienced anything like that as far as data breaches and being hacked and all those things, and I mean, it comes from doing a good job, you know?
Excellent. Now, let's get your product service line. Do you focus strictly on the compliance for accountants and the IRS rules, or do you actually also help the accountants actually fortify their lines of defense when it comes to cybersecurity? And in that regard, I know that accountants are like a prime target for the cyber attacker these days because their databases are a treasure trove of client data. Do you actually help them with AWS or Azure migrations to the cloud if that's where they want to go to host their infrastructure?
Yeah, we do recommend if someone's using, for instance, like a QuickBooks desktop, that the migration to QuickBooks Online and then the opportunities that that brings them with having the app marketplace and all those things, so they can really fine-tune the company and have everything talking with each other. But cloud migrations to Azure, if they're using Office 365, or if you know they're hell-bent on going to AWS, like we can help move those desktop instances to the cloud so that they're able to have the benefits of cloud version software. And sometimes it's hard to get people on board with it. They're like, I need to see it. I need to physically see this thing. And it's like, it's in the closet, you know, like you don't actually see it anyway. So it's just someone else's closet that has your server in it, that has a ton of sources of backup and redundancy and more stuff than you could ever even possibly afford to make it perfect in a sense. So we do help with that, but the compliance piece of what we do is kind of the foot in the door introduction first project to get a good baseline for then adding on the security and the VPN and the backup and the encryption and things like that. All those come into play. Some of them are part of the compliance process. And then once we get them to where they need to be on the baseline, then we move into the managed services model of maintaining that compliance and acting as basically a CTO. So when someone comes to me and says, well, you know, we've got all of our files on a Windows 7 desktop that we call server, and we can't access these things anywhere. There's multiple sources of the same file and different computers. Nothing talks with each other. How do we make it talk? Things like that are solutions that we can offer. And, I mean, Office 365 has done a really good job. And, I mean, love them or hate them, Microsoft has done a really good job at changing themselves from just being like, we sell you Word, we sell Excel, to really having an all-in-one spot where everything works with each other.
Yeah, I've got a client that I've written a lot of articles for. They're an O365 Azure shop, actually, and I've written a lot of stuff on, you know, Azure and M365, and I got to tell you, I'm very, very impressed with what Microsoft has done with that. You know, when it was, you know, like 20 years ago, and I just wish that they made their Windows 10 OS a lot better, you know, on the same par as
Can't
Azure.
Win them all. Better than 8.
I hate this operating system like you wouldn't believe. But anyway, enough of my ranting and raving there. But now, okay, in cybersecurity, there's a lot of jargon out there. You know, that's one of the biggest, that's one thing that we're all known for is all this, you know, techno jargon, acronyms, slangs. One of them is multi-factor authentication. Another one that's kind of being bandied about right now is what's called Zero Trust Framework. When you approach a new client or an existing one, how well do you embrace the MFA approach or even the Zero Trust Framework approach? What are your thoughts and views on that?
So the MFA approach, and luckily slash unluckily, because it makes doing the maintenance pain, but the MFA is required actually for compliance in the accounting field. So it's not much of a discussion as to whether or not they want it. It's more of what it's going to look like in this organization and less of, do you want this? You know, being in IT, we know the benefits of the zero trust model, and I think it's one of those things that it's so great in theory, but then you run into it in practice and it's, well, you know, I got a flash drive from a client and they're sitting in front of me and now I can't open anything, or I'm trying to do this one-off thing and now I can't do anything. And so it's a lot of, I need access to this, I need access to this. So the zero trust model, I think from an IT perspective, if your users are doing what they're supposed to be doing, and the job is very, very much like you live inside this software and that's all you do, I think that it's a very good thing to strive for. Not to say that it's foolproof by any stretch, but putting things like giving people user privileges as opposed to everybody admin and things like that, it accomplishes, it's not a, you know, one-to-one match by any stretch, but it knocks out some of the bigger risks, like downloading ransomware and things like that. And I mean, there's, you know, don't get me wrong, there's a million ways around everything. But the MFA, it's one of those necessary evils, because especially in today's society, you have one password, and even though we all know we're not supposed to use it on everything, people do it anyway. And we've all heard the uppercase, lowercase numbers and symbol, at least 8 characters. And I mean, everyone's familiar with that, but it's like, oh, well, I don't care about this thing. I'll make my password the same for everything. And what they don't realize is if you use the same password on Bank of America that you do on, I don't know, just say Ashley Furniture or something, you're like, oh, I don't care. You're not going to, you know, look at my account of stuff, whatever. I don't care about that password. Thing is, if Ashley Furniture has a data breach and you use the same username, password on a banking website, and we've actually seen this happen where they took the information from a data breach, the hacker logged into the computer, didn't have multi-factor authentication on it, or they logged into the bank account, wired the money out, and the bank's stance on it was you gave that person permission because they never reset your password. They never did anything to make it look like you didn't just hand them this information. So, I mean, if nothing else, especially when you're dealing with banking information, like you've got a multi-factor, it's annoying, but just do it. You know, like,
yeah.
That's kind of where the conversation's going. And if they're in Office 365, you know, you could set up push notifications for majority of it, and it makes the maintenance on our side more difficult and kind of a case-by-case basis. But for some of like the smaller one-off people where it's like you are the one that is accessing all this, like we'll just make it push notification simple enough, and when it's not a whole lot for us to manage, then it's really no problem.
Okay. Just wondering, have you made use of biometric technology, you know, like fingerprint recognition, iris recognition, in your suite for protecting logins, I think?
No, we haven't. I mean, there's obviously machines that we manage that have those things built into it, but it isn't part of our security stack at the moment. Not to say that it's because it's bad or doesn't work or anything like that. It just hasn't been an area that we've explored.
Excellent. Now, suppose a client comes to and they just don't have the money, but they really need your services. How do you work things out with them? You know, or, you know, they really want your services, but they don't. How do they see a need for an MSP managed service provider like yourself?
So, I mean, that is something that is kind of one of the more difficult conversations, but we've come to the realization that the service that we offer is highly valuable. It's highly specialized. Anybody can benefit from it. And I mean, unfortunately, not everyone has the resources to be able to afford it. So, I mean, when we're in that situation, I mean, I know some guys locally that I can refer them to But whenever we work with clients, there isn't a, well, do you want backup? Yes or no. We can lower your price if you don't want it. It's more of, you need to purchase the full security stack, because if you don't, you're not compliant, which is, you know, a problem all in itself. But we don't sacrifice the quality of the work that we do, because in the past we did let clients do a la carte. And one of the horror stories that kind of sticks out was this, this woman, she specifically said, I don't want to pay for backup. I think it's a waste of money, blah, blah, blah. And she lost 30 years of her business overnight. And then it's our fault. It's like, well, you know, here's the email. And we literally, she was in a RAID 1, so one of the hard drives failed. So it was on the backup. So, like, literally, she was in the perfect position to pay for backup immediately when you know that you need it, because one of the drives already died, and they were both installed at the same time, same brand, everything. We're like, you need to buy this. She's like, no, it's expensive. And then lost everything. And then it's, well, why didn't you guys protect me? It's like, you literally said you don't want to purchase it. And so that, then there is a month of headache that came with the data recovery and just all these things. And we just came to the conclusion, the organization, that we're not giving clients the ability necessarily to pick and choose how protected they want to be. We just make sure now that everybody is covered front to back, because, you know, no one wants to pay for something that they'd never use, but you also don't want to be in the position as a managed service provider saying, I told you so, because the client doesn't want to hear that. They're mad that they've lost all their data, and now it's going to cost thousands and thousands of dollars to attempt a data recovery at a center with a guy in one of those clean rooms. And, you know, nobody wins. And so we just came to the conclusion that if you'd like to work with an organization like us that specializes in a particular industry, that we can do better than virtually anybody, you know, maybe someone can't afford it. But I mean, for the most part, I mean, we're talking, you know, like $100 to $120 per month per user. So, I mean, if you look at like $3 to $4 per day for a full-time IT staff and a CTO, like, it's really not that expensive, but some people don't see the value in it and would rather do an a la carte and pay $150 per hour for a service instead of getting a plan. But, you know, there's that's something that accountants deal with also. People show up with a shoebox at the end of the year full of receipts and they say, do my taxes. And it's like, we could have saved you so much money if you were a little proactive with this. But so, and accountants understand that. So, you know, speaking their language, they get why the proactive approach makes more sense and why not paying every single time that you need to fix one thing, why in the long run that's not a smart move. And just in a business, downtime is extremely costly, especially when your organization is growing. At one point we had, there was a time where the internet went out, and this is before we had two sources of internet for redundancy, but the lesson learned, we had the internet go out, and it wasn't even during prime time either. It was like between 6 p.m. and 10 p.m. And we calculated that downtime cost us is about $6,000. And it was like, that would have paid for a secondary ISP for years if we had that. And we don't have anything. Like, if we don't have the internet, then we don't have our phones. And our phones are all run on VoIP. So we can't even tell our customers that we are down. So then we've got to scramble and people on hotspots, and then nobody can connect. And we realize that most of the computers don't have Wi-Fi built into them because we never needed it until today. And just absolute nightmare. So most of the stuff, it's like, you can learn from my mistake and pay a couple extra bucks a month, or you can make the mistake yourself and, you know, have to pay more in the long run.
Well, okay, now, how do you get your company recognized as a top 100 company in accounting today? How did you grow your company from $36,000 to almost $2 million in a time span of less than 2 years?
Yeah, so the accounting today is like a friend of a friend of a friend, third cousin, something, somebody. I had been asked to publish an article on the website, and I guess it coincided with when they were running the top 100 list. So I submitted us to the list while I was on their site for the publication, and then we eventually, I guess they did some sort of due diligence, and we landed number 99 out of 100, still top 100. And the growth piece of the company story. So year one, that first company I was at that had gone out of business, the arrangement I made with the owner was, look, I'll keep running your company for you. And after 2 months, like, you don't have to pay me anything. After 2 months, though, anybody who calls, I'm going to change their billing to me. And so that was how I had started the company, was sit back, twiddle my fingers, and wait for the phone to ring. And then I was, I had a friend that was working for a large tech company. They had 60,000 customers. And he was like, you've got a customer list of 500 people. Why are you waiting for them to call you? Why don't you reach out to them? And it seemed like I don't even think that's going to work, but sure, whatever, you can try it. And year one did like 36,000. And then year two, when I stopped focusing so much on, I'm going to spend a whole week researching what the best possible antivirus is and running all these tests in virtual machines and comparing the results. The customers don't care what antivirus you use. They want you to solve their problem. So when I came to that realization that I need to actually run a business and not worry so much about the ins and outs of every little piece of software that my customers don't care about. My customers want fast resolution, and they want solutions to their problems, and they just want it to work. That's what they want. And so when I took a higher level view of the company, I was like, how do we make it just work consistently, and how do we get everybody on the same page communicating? And once I realized that, we had done really well with the 500 customers, and then actually the company that I was at before the startup, they had actually gone out of business, and they had like 60,000 customers. And one of the higher ups there reached out to me, and he was like, hey, I know you did it with your 500 customer company. Do you think you could do that with this 60,000 customer company and just give me like a piece of it? And I was like, sure. And so that was a giant piece of, you know, we had several days where it was like $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 in new sales. And it was like, oh my gosh, like, we were focusing on the wrong thing in year one. And I mean, I was just looking to replace my income at year one, but then year two, it was like, you know, single days, we're making more than I would make in 6 months working for somebody else. Like, let's keep putting fuel on this fire and growing and scaling. And I mean, eventually, like, the list, you know, is very, very hot and relevant in 2015. But, you know, as time goes on, it's less and less as the years go by. So we had to eventually pivot. We had several more of these merger acquisitions over the next couple of years. And then when those opportunities weren't as prevalent was really when we were taking the look at, you know, who is Rush Tech? Like, who can we serve better than anybody else? And, you know, the accountants, it was like, I have a background in finance. I did an internship with the IRS. I already speak their language. We've already got a ton of customers that happen to be accountants that we can service better than anybody else. And so we can find lower cost solutions to like a custom branded portal so that clients aren't shooting over an email of their W-2s and information like that. So the accountants have something that looks professional that we can provide to them. And it's just something that most companies, it doesn't make sense to find all these very specific solutions to a specific problem if it's only occurring in a handful of customers. But in our case, all of our customers have QuickBooks and have issues in QuickBooks, all of them. So it's very important for us to be up to date and know the ins and outs of it. You know, for a normal managed service provider, having all of your employees with certifications from the American Institute of CPAs in cybersecurity, for a normal managed service provider, that, okay, whatever, you've got something that only applies to a fraction of your customers. But for us, it's the flip side. Like 19 of our last 20 new customers were accountants. And so that stands out specifically to them much more than it would back when we were in merger acquisition phase and speaking mostly with residential. But you know, we've identified our specific client, what hits home with them, what specific problems do they face in their industry, and how do we position ourselves to be able to solve that problem better than anybody else. And that's been one of the huge changes in the organization, and so why it's not as large as it was, but the quality and how much we can bring to the table for our clients is just night and day better than it was. And it was already, like, we've got hundreds of positive reviews already. So it's not like it wasn't at a great level to begin with, but now seeing the level that we bring to the table compared to the generalist, it's really interesting to see the transformation and like the things that we learn every day. And, you know, last week was really difficult for us because it was tax week. So it was the deadline. And so for us, that was huge news. But for any other managed service provider, you got a couple clients here and there that are busy this week. But for us, it was, we need everybody, all hands on deck, making sure that our clients are taken care of because they don't have the luxury of being down. They need everything immediately.
Right.
And so we were able to provide that level of service and increase our the SLAs or improve the SLAs specifically for the accountants so that they could get everything handled. And, you know, when you've got a deadline, that's when everything breaks. And so last week was pretty stressful.
I know that part, believe me. Okay, awesome. Well, it sounds like your company really, you know, thrives itself and prides itself on, you know, quality customer service. But apart from that, what separates you from your competitors? So why should I come to you and say, Andrew, I really need your help with my accounting firm getting cybersecurity? I mean, I'm sure there are probably other, you know, MSPs out there that I'm not sure if they specialize just in doing this, but they probably make that a part of part of their customer pie. So what makes you suffer from the others? What's your differentiator that, you know, that makes you really stand out apart from getting those honors and other accolades?
Yeah, the honors and accolades are a nice thing to have, but really the separation is that the reason why we do a lot of the pieces of our security stack for our clients, it is based straight from laws. And other managed service providers from an IT perspective, most of them do a great job at IT. And in a general sense, a lot of the companies, when a client is not pleased with them for whatever reason and doesn't really understand any of the stuff that happens anyway, which is pretty much all of them, that they hire us because they don't understand IT stuff. So you could be great at it. If you're better than the client, they just think you know everything anyway. So the big differentiator with us, I mean, having the accolades, yes, that's great, and that's a vote of confidence, you know, that I speak on QuickBooks expert panels. Yes, that's great and all, but we literally live and breathe the accounting industry, know it better than any other IT provider. So when a client comes to us, we're not sitting there like, oh, you have a product and it is called Sage? What does that mean? Like, we dig deeper into it. And I've had people that are like, yeah, I use this thing called Lacerte. And I'm like, yeah, okay, we've already got everything built out for Lacerte. So what else? And he's like, you know what that is? Yes. The other piece that most people don't think about is that when we deal with, let me say there's maybe like five to 10 software, like SaaS products that all of our clients use in some form or another. So we see a lot of the same problems over and over and over because we deal with a lot of the same people over and over and over. So when you have an obscure situation where you say, how do I set up multi-factor authentication in Drake Accounting 2018? And we can say, it doesn't exist in 2018, started in 2019. So to have those answers instead of the first time when that was introduced to us and we spent an entire evening trying to solve the problem and reached out to Drake directly. We're like, where is this button? None of your documentation says that it's there. This is confusing. This isn't there. So we've already been through these innocuous little things that most IT companies, it's not like they couldn't come to that same conclusion after however long that they looked into it. But when you have a tech that's seen the same problem over and over and over and over, your resolution time is faster and faster and faster and faster. So we're more efficient at our jobs. And when we are efficient, then we can service more customers. And when you service more customers in an efficient manner, it becomes profitable. So, the niching idea, it's not this revolutionary thing that we thought of that no one else has ever thought of, but you know, the flip side to it is we'll have a lawyer that says, well, you only work with accountants. It's like, actually, their laws are way stricter than yours, so we can service you. But the generalist that says we service everybody, maybe they have a better position in that. But tick for tack, if someone is an accountant in the accounting industry, there's like five of us that I'm aware of.
Well,
that specialize in the accounting industry out of the thousands and thousands of MSPs.
Well, that's really, that's awesome. Well, okay. I want to kind of pick your brains here about some of the other more pressing cybersecurity issues that I see prevalent. As you know, I'm a writer and I peruse news headlines every evening, you know, trying to tweet out what I think is relevant to people in general. Now, the Internet of Things, you know, it's kind of where everything's connected, you know, virtually, you know, or everything's connected both virtually and in the physical worlds. What are your thoughts on that? I find the IoT to be a very scary proposition. Right? It just increases the attack surface for the cyber attacker. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, do you have like a smart car or a smart home or anything like that?
Yeah, our house is like super smart home. And, you know, working in IT, like I set up VLANs with reduced permissions for IoT and things like that. But for the everyday user, I think right now the IoT world is a low-hanging fruit, and we're seeing more and more that these devices in our house are not as secure as we'd hope. And I actually saw an article – I watched the video of it the other day where someone, they hacked a, it was a smart coffee maker, and they made a display on the screen, like a little devil face, and they made like the grinder going off like crazy and and like having it spit out water. And it's like, you literally can hack a coffee maker. And, you know, then there's also like the, well, okay, say somebody does hack my coffee maker. Okay, so what? But it's more of like the overwhelming, they can get into these things that are connected to your network. And majority of the networks that we go into, one of the things that we do with our customers in a Windows environment, we'll do an IP config and we'll look at the gateway. And then with the customer there, we will type in the gateway in the browser. And then, you know, it'll say Netgear router or whatever. And then we Google default Netgear login. And then we copy paste the username password in front of the customer and log into their network. And we're like, I just Googled in front of your eyes how to do this. This wasn't a crazy IT kiddie script hack. This is one command that's like a 101 command and a Google search. And we got in. So making sure that your network is secured is something that a lot of people take for granted. And I mean, I get it, because if you're not in IT and cybersecurity, you're not seeing every day your friend got hacked or something like that. But we get phone calls every day from people. I was hacked, blah, blah, blah. I need help. I was hacked. And it's like, we see it every day because we're the people they call. But, you know, everyone in your neighborhood may not be experiencing this. So you're saying, well, I'm not going to spend money and invest in protection. Like, this is a safe neighborhood and we don't get hacked here, which is a funny mindset. So I think the IoT, it's going to have a huge, huge, huge risk once everybody, because, you know, right now, like, everybody's had a virus on their computer, more or less. So they know how frustrating it is. They know that they were trying to be careful, but something tricked them into something and it froze, and, you know, pre-ransomware and pre all these other things that exist now, people are familiar with a virus. So they have antivirus. Not a whole lot of argument there. Well, there are with Mac people, but in general, it's widely accepted. Yeah, I need antivirus because I know what a virus is and I don't want that to happen again. But with IoT security, it's so new and so few people have real-world experience with it that it's just kind of like, well, is this just kind of a made-up?
Hey, Andrew.
Sorry about that.
No, okay.
How far did we get into IoT?
I don't know. Well, we can move on to the next question. I think the listeners pretty much got your idea on that one. Now, the next one is on the world of artificial intelligence. I've got a book coming out next February on that topic. You know, this is where we try to mimic the human brain as much as possible. You know, we'll never come close to it, or even 1%. What are your thoughts of using AI in cybersecurity, and have you ever used AI for your line of business?
I'm pretty sure most software vendors in the cybersecurity space are using AI to be able to identify and detect new and emerging threats, like the zero days and things like that. We're not currently using anything in that realm. I mean, more of what we're doing is the monitoring and the maintenance and the solutions to the problems, more so than the, and I mean, AI, it could be a blanket term for a lot of things, but in like the computer learning sphere of like, here are the rules to chess and what's the next move that you should take in order to beat a grandmaster. In that type of sense, we're not currently utilizing anything like that, but I know our vendors are using it in threat detection. And I think when it's less of this far out concept, kind of like the IoT thing, where we're kind of scratching the surface of it and what it's fully capable of. Like, I don't know if you saw that documentary, The Social Dilemma, where it just talks about like the Facebook AI doing A/B testing and just knowing exactly everything about you and what you do like and what you don't like, and only showing you things that you do like in order to keep you just glued to your phone. I think, you know, right now that's kind of like, oh, they're these bad guys that have access to this information, is kind of the conversation. And I think it's going to eventually shift to, we're going to use AI to kind of weed out some of the lower level jobs, and the jobs in the future will be more creative and operational and less of like, hey, go out and pick strawberries, because machines do all of that. But who is marketing the sale of them and things like that, I think, is the direction that it's going to be, kind of just like when computers first hit the market. And it's like, what do you do with this thing? And now it's like, well, you do everything with it. I think AI will eventually get to there.
Okay, excellent. Now, we were talking, I think, earlier in the show about the remote workforce. You know, as we know, COVID-19 really started hitting in March. I don't think we ever expected it to change the world as, you know, as we thought, you know, it could. Probably the biggest impact has been on this remote workforce. This is a concept that people thought would happen, not like maybe 3 or 4 years down the road with a 98% remote workforce, but we saw this transformation in a matter of 2 months. So how has COVID-19, this remote workforce, affected your business, your employees, and even your clients?
Yeah, COVID-19 is one of the like worst and best things that, well, I mean, really in the IT space, I mean, it just makes us even more crucial to the success of organizations, because when people first, you know, March comes around and it's like, we've all got to work from home, but everyone's using SaaS products anyway. So it was like, well, I guess we just, yep, guess it just works. And I think what's going to start happening more and more, and it already is happening, but there's going to be a lot more data breaches, and it's going to affect a lot more people at a much higher scale, because not everybody is in an office that has been locked down and secured for them. It's now all of your employees are Wild West, and I hope you've got the right setup to protect them from the unknown unknowns, because it's not like people go out and download a virus on purpose. You know, it's not a button that says, click here for ransomware. It's like, I clicked it. Now we got ransomware. Like, it's disguise. So it's not a matter of, I'm an idiot for clicking it. They specifically design it to look very, very, very compelling that, oh, I need to reset my Microsoft password. Well, it came from our domain, so I guess I will. And then you type it in, it's like, oh, that password didn't work, redirects you to real Microsoft. And meanwhile, you've just typed in your password and gave keys to the castle without even realizing it. So the COVID work from home movement has been very beneficial in the IT space, because people now can't just, well, I'm going to walk around and look at what everyone's doing and make sure that they do what I say, because now it's either 100% honor system, and anybody with employees knows that's it's easier said than done, or having something in place to make sure that your company is protected from accidents from your employees.
Okay. Now, the next big issue, and I think you touched on upon this, you know, more detail how it relates with the IRS. But is your line of business, are you also impacted by the CCPA and the GDPR as well too?
The CCP more so than GDPR, but basically I think what's going to start happening in America is it's not going to just be California and some of the more progressive states. I think it's going to be more for a push like GDPR, and once people will start to realize like what is going on, I think there will eventually be some sort of data governments of how much data you can collect, and you know, maybe there is like a tax that goes on the data that's collected, so that organizations were not collecting every single piece of minutia about all of our clients, and then if a data breach were to happen, it's all out there. So I think if there's some sort of, and I mean, I'm not trying to like push for this, but I think eventually we're going to have to do something about the corporate responsibility to make sure that consumer data is protected and that they are doing everything that they can in order to protect it. And, you know, the EU is a lot more ahead of the time on these things, and same with California, but I think it's just a matter of time before either the government finds a way to tax it and make money off of it and disguise it as consumer protection, or if there's just something catastrophic that happens that just forces it so that everyone becomes aware of it.
Excellent. Now, as we come close to wrapping up our show here, just some other questions here. How do you foresee the cyber threat landscape evolving in the coming years, especially now? You know, I mean, we got the elections coming up here in a couple of weeks. There's all this talk about election security, you know, Russians meddling in, so forth. You know, we're coming in 2021. COVID's still going to be around. What do you think the biggest, how do you all see all this evolving? And what will that biggest cybersecurity threat be, do you think?
I think it's kind of funny that we're still in this mindset that somehow people running the polls is going to be safer and better than doing it off of a secure connection. I mean, you can pay your taxes online. Why do you need to show up to a poll and vote? And you don't have the luxury of having Google right there and doing research while you're doing it. I think it's kind of insane that this election is not just 100% digital when the whole world has become 100% digital, but just, well, you show up and vote and it's your duty as a citizen. Like, no wonder the turnouts are so low, because it's a pain, and we live in a world where it's not like this is, you know, the election when Bill Clinton was elected and the internet was brand new and no one understood it or knew how to secure it. Like, you can type in your social security number, have that be tied to your account, and there you go. And you increase turnout a ton by making it easier to participate. And as far as the meddling and things like that, I mean, we live in a society now that I think is more polarized in right versus left than ever before in history. And if you are pro-Trump, you will only see pro-Trump ads. You will only see pro-Trump posts. Everything you see will solidify and give you confirmation bias on how you feel, and you won't listen to the other side of the story because there isn't an other side to the story, because AI only shows us exactly what we think we want to see. So So there isn't a middle ground in a compelling argument for the Democrat versus the Republican. It's I choose Republican, and it's virtually impossible to change what is in your newsfeed, especially if you feel a certain way about something. And it's not a right and wrong. It's just we live in a society, and with the internet and with all the information that's out about people. And I mean, for myself, I'm not getting crazy political. Like, I am a Republican. The only thing that I care about politically is taxes. And the only thing that I see is a quick clip about Biden saying, you elect me, I'm going to raise your taxes. And that's pretty much all I've been presented about the other side as far as the information goes. Like, I'm not presented with compelling arguments about how his strategy is better than ours. Like, all I see is pick Trump. He's the best, right? Like, that's all that my feed says. But someone else on the other side gets the exact opposite of look how stupid Trump is, and Biden's going to fix this, and this. But it's
right.
You know, we're kind of just brainwashed, and
yeah,
they don't.
Yeah, we.
There isn't attention in the other point of view, because you know the marketers, they make money off of your attention. And if they are presenting you with information that you don't like, you won't pay attention to it because of confirmation bias. So, and I think just in general, like when it comes to politics, I don't think people, it's like, oh, you brought up a good point. Now I feel differently on the topic. It's like religion. It's like you feel the way you feel, and no compelling argument will change how you feel about something. So, I mean, I'm not well educated in the meddling of the Russians and how it changed the outcome of our election, or allegedly with that. So, you know, I can't really speak on it, but personally, I feel that people are just going to do what they want to do and will look for any sort of confirmation bias they can find.
Now, as we're wrapping up our show, do you have a laundry list of items that you tell people of how they can protect themselves, like you tell to your clients or your family members or close friends? Now, we all are at risk of being a victim of a cyber attack, obviously, but what do you tell them to help them mitigate that risk? Do you have like a top 3 or 4 items you usually tell people?
Sure. So the IRS and the Security Summit put out a thing called the Security 6, which is actually a very good best practice. And it's your computer needs to have antivirus, it needs to have firewall, needs to have multi-factor authentication, needs to have VPN, needs to have backup, needs to have full disk encryption. Now, FDE, is it completely necessary on every single system? I mean, it's better than not having it, but at the same time, you run into a lot of problems that happen if someone loses the decryption key. But I mean, really the best thing you can do is just, if something pops up, look into it yourself. You see an email and it says, click here to reset your Microsoft password, log into your Microsoft and see if that's actually what needs to happen. Don't click on things that popped up that you weren't looking for. It is first and foremost on how to protect yourself.
Excellent. Now, that's a couple of personal questions I want to ask you. You mentioned you've got 2 kids here, Colby and Jack. Now, did you name them after the cheese product, or how those names come about?
Jack came first, and it was just the name that we liked, and Colby was also a name that we liked, and we had kind of realized that we are going to run into the Colby Jack cheese thing a lot, but my wife was shopping for baby toys, and the guy at the checkout counter was the first person she had ever met named Colby, and we kind of took that as like a sign that number 2 should have that name, so we stuck with it. So the cheese was an afterthought.
Okay, well, All right, now finally, one last thing I want to ask you. I mean, you seem like a serial entrepreneur, obviously. I mean, you have the Rush Tech support. You do small business coaching, real estate, rental properties, wow, and other, you know, startups like that. How do you find the time to do all this stuff?
It's an absolute nightmare. So time blocking is crucial if your schedule is packed with a whole lot of things. And really the best thing that I do is I just dedicate certain days to certain tasks. So when I'm dealing with my rental properties, I have several of them. It's just the third of every month is when I reconcile the books, when I go through all the houses and make sure that everything is in order, and just I've got a couple hours allocated to that. So I'm not just flying through each and every day without some sort of direction. I time block so that I can specifically focus on the things that matter, as opposed to just, I woke up today, now what happens next? You know, like the rest of my day is all already planned out and it's intentional. So the only way that you can handle the amount of things that are on my plate.
Sure. Well, Andrew, what's the best way for prospects or even other people that might be listening to the show or downloading it later, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Best place would be either LinkedIn or every now and then on Facebook, Andrew Lassise, Lassise. And they could check out my podcast, the Tech Talk for Accountants show. And, yeah. And, Ravi, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's been an honor and privilege. Thank you so much for your time. As I said, this is the very first podcast, I think, since I've been doing this since 2014, that I've met an individual who owns a company that specializes in just one thing in cyber. In fact, I got to tell you, it's really refreshing to kind of hear that, because I've interviewed so many people that try to do so many different things, you know, but you stick to one thing, you do it well, and you offer the best quality service. So keep up the great work, and good luck, and we hope to have you again in the future on another podcast.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for your time.